Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And today, it's time for another classic episode of Tech Stuff. This episode originally published on June 3rd, 2013. It is titled, The Evolution of Batteries. So we talk all about how batteries were first invented and then how they changed over time. I'm sure you'll get a real charge out of it. Let's listen.
You have something called Moore's Law. That's that observation that in general, microprocessors get twice the number of discrete elements. Or if you prefer to think of it in another way, microprocessors tend to get twice as powerful every 2 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Thereabouts.
So, yeah, this is not exponential growth, which I have called it in previous episodes, by the way.
And people write in every time and call it, take us to task on it.
Which is important. Because
you should, it's when we get things wrong.
It's a misuse of the word exponential. It's a colloquial use, but I do not want to go down that hole again because I'm like you guys. I get irritated when people misuse words too. I just wish I didn't do it as frequently myself. But anyway, it does double every 2 years or so. And that's a phenomenal amount of growth. We're talking about microprocessors that have billions of discrete elements on them now, and they're all down at the nanoscale. So there's this amazing amount of technology that has been poured into microprocessors.
Mm-hmm. Partially because Moore's Law exists and companies strive to
keep up with it. Yeah,
sure.
to maintain it. Because Moore's Law, as we know, is not a real physical law. It's more of an observation. And companies, no one wants to be the company that comes out
that
and says,
it, yeah.
Yeah, we can't do that anymore.
You know, we just got bored. Yeah.
So
no,
it means that there's been a lot of innovation in that space. But meanwhile, on the battery front, batteries have, in large part, remain more or less the same for decades. I mean, we've seen improvements in battery life. We've seen improvements in battery efficiency, but
there have been some new technologies,
yeah,
over the past 50 years.
But Even so, it just hasn't, it hasn't at all kept up with the microprocessor side. This is also, by the way, this ties into our episodes where we talked about things like the singularity, where we talk about how technology doesn't all progress at the same rate. So while we do see devices getting more and more sophisticated and powerful, the power supplies aren't keeping up with that trend. So it may be that the singularity, if it is ever going to arrive, is further off than what some people think, simply because the power side of the equation is lagging behind the technological sophistication side.
Right, absolutely.
So why is that? Well, to understand it, we kind of have to, one, talk about what a battery is, and two, sort of look at the history of the development of batteries and talk about what exactly it does. Now, on a very, very basic level, a battery is something that uses electrochemical reactions so that you can guide electrons through a circuit and have it do work.
And that's about it.
Yeah, that's really all a battery is. And it's because there are certain chemicals that when they have these reactions, they lose electrons in the process. And if you are able to guide them,
if you control the flow of those electrons, then
you've got a battery.
Mm-hmm.
So batteries date back possibly as long as more than 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, these clay jars found in modern-day Iraq in 1938, you might have heard of them called Baghdad batteries, where clay jars that contained an iron rod encased in copper. Tests suggest that the jars were at some point filled with something acidic like vinegar or wine. And modern-day replicas have successfully created an electric charge. They might have been used for something like anything from religious rituals and medicinal purposes to even electroplating.
Right. And if you've seen, if you're a big Mythbusters fan, you may have seen an episode where they actually showed these. They created one of these batteries, and then they tried to see if they could get enough of a charge for it to be detectable. So that's a indication of that we were familiar with the fact that certain materials under certain circumstances could emit this weird energy. Now, at that time, we weren't necessarily really aware of all the things it could do, but that would change as the centuries would pass. The next big date I have is quite some time later, which is 1799. And that's when Alessandro Volta...
Count Alessandro Volta.
He's only one. If there were more than one, I would count him. Oh, sorry. You're talking about a nobility rank. So Count Volta created a battery by stacking alternating layers of zinc. Lauren's just checked out at this point. Zinc, brine-soaked cloth or paper, and silver. He used these alternating layers, kind of a sandwich here. And we call this a voltaic peel. I mean, peel because it's French.
And voltaic after Volta.
Yes. And so this peel or pile, if you prefer, because it is a pile of stuff, when you put it in this configuration, you start getting these chemical reactions that emit electrons. And you could make the stack taller and taller to get more electrons, a stronger flow of current through this peel. But in order to do that, you actually had to stack it up so high that eventually the weight from the top would start to squish the layers on the bottom, which would kind of make the brine soak out.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make it less effective. And also, the metal itself would start to corrode fairly quickly.
From the brine and the movement, the electrons.
Right. It just wasn't a practical way of generating electricity, but it showed the premise. And it gave scientists the idea of, there's something here, and if we can figure out other ways of generating the same kind of energy, we might be able to harness it for something. Skipping ahead, I mean, there are lots of different developments in this technology. I have two specific ones.
Yeah.
I think you have a few more.
Oh, the next really effective one was 1836.
Yeah. John Frederick Daniell, who was an English physicist, he created what we now call the Daniell cell, which was you take a glass jar, and at the bottom of the glass jar, you put on in a copper plate. So copper plate in the bottom of the glass jar, and there's a wire from the copper plate that comes out of the jar. Then you pour copper sulfate on top of that copper plate to about the halfway point of the jar. Then you suspend a zinc plate in the jar, and then you pour zinc sulfate solution on top of the zinc plate. Now, zinc sulfate is less dense than copper sulfate. So zinc sulfate will float on top of copper sulfate. If you've ever played with liquids of different densities that had different colors, then you know what I'm talking about. You can see that actual level of
separation.
Division. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's actually, it's one of my favorite things. I just think it's super cool when I see that. I'm easily amused, I admit it. But anyway, you also have a wire coming from the zinc plate, and exiting the jar. So a wire attached to this would become, that zinc plate becomes the negative terminal. That's where the electrons are flowing from.
Mm-hmm.
And the copper plate becomes the positive terminal. That's where electrons are flowing to. And so if you were to connect the two wires together, it would very quickly burn out this battery. But, if you were to connect it to a circuit, it could actually do, or a load, as we call it, it could actually do work. So, again, not terribly practical. It was useful for anything that was stationary. But, you know, you're talking about a liquid, battery here. So it's not something that you could easily carry around or put into portable electronics.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's a lot more elegant ways of getting that electrolyte kind of solution of just a charged molecule than.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wouldn't be until we developed dry cell battery technology that we started to find practical ways of using it in portable means, you know, and even then the batteries weren't small enough to use in what we consider portable electronics today, but you could move it around. The kind of Daniell cells that John Frederick Daniell created were useful for different technologies, things like telephones. It was stuff that back then you did not carry around. I don't know if you kids know this, but telephones used to be these things that were extremely stationary. It's only recently that we started carrying them around. Anyway, that's the kind of battery that became popular for that. Now, did you have any other ones you wanted to talk about before we move on to the basics of batteries?
Rechargeable batteries. The science for that started with research around 1859 or so when a French physicist, Gaston Plante, invented the lead acid cell. And that was a precursor to modern day car batteries.
So there you have, the discovery that this chemical reaction that takes place within a battery, you get compounds that form out of it, and it makes the battery over time less effective. That's why batteries die eventually. The active elements that would create the flow of electrons end up combining with other stuff. And for the purposes of passing a current through a circuit, they become inert.
So something either wears out or maybe the anode or cathode could dissolve in the solution.
Right. Essentially what it means is that you run out of the stuff you need in order
to
make this go. Right. And so, what was it, Plante?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes. What Plante discovered was that for some kinds of solutions, if you were to pass electric current through the system as opposed to siphoning it off, you could reverse this reaction.
The process and create a battery that can be used more than once.
Right. Now, this does not work for all batteries, which is why you can't just throw any regular battery into a recharger and expect it to come out fine.
If you did that to a Duracell or something like that, just explode.
Right. But. It has to be batteries that are using specific compounds in it for it to have this reversible reaction, because not all compounds will reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, once they're done.
And
that's
a
dead battery.
We will talk about that a little bit later. But,
right.
But let's talk about how exactly this circuitry works.
Okay, so if you've ever looked at a battery, you've seen that there's a side that is labeled as a plus and one that's labeled as a minus, so positive and negative. If you're looking at like a 9-volt battery, then they're next to each other. If you're looking at double A's or whatever, then it's on one end and the other. So the negative end, that's where the electrons flow out of. That's the electrons flow from that end through a circuit and into the positive end. Now we know that, the opposite charges attract. So that's why the negative wants to get to the positive. And inside the battery itself, there is a chemical called an electrolyte. Now, the electrolyte has a very important job. It blocks those electrons from just passing from the negative side to the positive side
directly. Because that would burn everything out.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to power anything. The battery would just have a chemical reaction inside a canister, and it would be dead within however long it took for those
not
those
very long
reactions. Yeah. So it does allow ions to pass through, but not electrons. And that becomes important. So the negative terminal is connected to something that is called the anode. The positive terminal is connected to what we call the cathode. And these together are the electrodes of a battery. Then you've got the separator between the anode and the cathode. That's preventing those two sides from reacting to each other. And you have the electrolyte that allows the electric charge to flow between cathode and anode, allowing the ions to pass through while making sure the electrons don't. And then you have a collector, which is the part of the battery that conducts the charge to the outside of the battery and through whatever the load is, the electronic load. So the circuit. So within that anode side, the negative side, the chemical reaction that takes place is called oxidation. It's an oxidation reaction. This ends up releasing ions, and the ions move through the electrolyte to combine on the other side. And then you've got the release of electrons that go through the circuitry. On the cathode side, you've got the reduction reaction. That's where the cathode material and the ions combine with the electrons that are coming in through the circuit.
Those free electrons, right?
Yeah, that they form a new compound. And so essentially, you've got the anode freeing up electrons, the cathode accepting electrons, and the electrons do work along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to actually connect a wire from the negative terminal to the positive terminal, you would allow that pathway to be open, and it would just start to burn up that battery.
And free flow, yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Don't do that. It's a waste of batteries. It's going to heat up that wire. It doesn't do anything other than kill your battery.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. So when you've got it plugged into something, whenever you turn the switch on to whatever it is, whether it's a lightsaber or a phaser, you know, I allow all kinds of science fiction toys for batteries. But whenever you turn it on, it opens up that circuit and that allows the electrons to flow through. And when you turn it off, then one of the gates gets closed, essentially, and you no longer the connection's no longer there, so the battery stops the chemical reaction. It has to have that pathway open for the chemical reaction to keep going. Now, there are several different basic types of batteries that are out there, and we're just going to cover a couple of them, and we're covering them based upon the stuff that's inside them.
Right, because there's a whole bunch of different substances that you can use to create these reactions, like we said. So
yeah, so one basic type is alkaline batteries. The anode in alkaline batteries tends to be zinc powder. So the anode, again, is that negative side. That's where the electrons are coming from. The cathode side has typically manganese dioxide, and the electrolyte is typically potassium hydroxide. These are the kind of batteries that you typically find in AA's, C, and D batteries.
Right. These are all examples of this is an example of dry cell batteries.
Yes. Which dry cell batteries, one of the big benefits of those is that you don't have to worry about liquid sloshing around inside the battery, so that allows it to be used in lots of applications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that's liquid, obviously you can't shake around too much or else it's going to disrupt it and you're not going to have a working battery for very
long.
They're more
volatile.
Yeah, you want that in a very stationary position. Then you've got zinc carbon batteries. These have an anode that's zinc, obviously. And then you've got the manganese dioxide cathode. But the electrolyte in this case is often either ammonium chloride or zinc chloride. These are often found in AAA, AA, C, and D dry cell batteries. Then you've got lithium ion batteries. These are the ones that we find in laptops, smartphones, cameras, that kind of stuff. They are rechargeable batteries and they have different materials in them, but, one common version of lithium-ion batteries uses a carbon anode and a lithium cobalt oxide cathode. And these are the ones that we use when we're recharging our various electronics very frequently anyway. Then you've got lead acid batteries. These are the ones that you often find in cars.
So, these are more heavy duty, right? They are more volatile. They do include liquid.
Yeah, they include their electrolyte tends to be sulfuric acid. This is one of the reasons why you want to be really careful with car batteries, because the materials inside them can be very caustic and they can damage you, your stuff, your car. It's why, you know, you got to be really careful with these things. They tend to have lead dioxide and metallic lead as their electrodes. So, yeah, the rechargeable battery we've already talked about, that's the kind where if you put the electric current through the battery, you reverse this chemical reaction. It depends upon what that rechargeable battery is made from, whether how effective this process is, right? Because there are some kinds of rechargeable batteries that have, well, they have a memory. And that memory is not a good one. The memory effect is what I'm talking about. So
right.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with this, but if you've ever heard someone say that before you recharge your device, you should make sure that it's completely the current charge is completely out.
This was due to some older types of batteries that have been mostly replaced by lithium ion batteries.
Yeah, nickel cadmium is the main culprit here. Mm-hmm. So the problem that some people notice with nickel cadmium is that if you used a nickel cadmium battery for a while and then you recharged it before you had completely discharged the original charge, it wouldn't hold as much of a charge the next time. So let's say that I've got a device that has a nickel cadmium battery in it and I run it down to about 20% left. Like it only has 20% charge left and I decide to recharge it. Well, now its new maximum charge is more like 80% of what it used to be. Because I didn't let it go all the way down. It remembers that 20%, but it doesn't let me actually consume that power anymore. Yeah, that was a problem. Now, most batteries now don't have that issue. I mean, there's still a minor memory effect in some rechargeable batteries, but it's not nearly as dramatic as the older batteries were.
Right. So if you are using a lithium ion battery and someone tells you that thing, you can tell them that we told you no.
No, not as big a deal. And another interesting thing about batteries is what happens if you place them in series versus in parallel. So in series, it sounds kind of, is what it is. You've got them hooked up so that they are all the
charge is running through one and then another and then another,
right.
in a sequence.
Yeah, in a sequence, exactly. And if you do that, you increase the voltage of the output. Now, if you put them in parallel, you increase the current. Now, you might wonder what's the difference between voltage and current if you're not really familiar with electronics. I always have to look this up because I always second guess myself. But mm-hmm. Voltage measures the energy per unit charge. And you can think of that as it's how strong the electrons are pushed through a circuit. So think of it like water pressure.
Right.
Through a hose. So the greater the water pressure, the harder that water is being pushed through the hose. That's essentially your voltage. And then current is the rate at which electric charge passes through a circuit. Now, voltage will stay constant. The voltage output will stay constant based upon whatever kind of battery you have or whether or not they're in series. But otherwise, it's going to remain the same. Current, however, will vary depending upon the load you place on it.
You hook up to
it,
right.
So, and that can, like the resistance of the wire can affect what the current is. So current is variable, voltage is not. And apart from the fact that if you put them in series, you increase the voltage. But once you've done that, it does not vary. All right, well, that's the basis. The very basic foundation of batteries. Guys, we're going to have to take a quick break. I just realized the podcast has run out of batteries, so I'm going to go run across the street, grab a couple more. I'll be right back.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change.
But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so we're back, and we've learned the basic function of a battery and how it does what it does. So what's the problem? Why haven't we made super batteries that last forever and never need to be recharged and can put out more energy than a generator?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's the first commercial dry cell batteries premiered in 1898, and they haven't really changed all that much since then.
Yeah, we've experimented with different materials.
Sure.
But the actual process has remained very much the same. And there are physical limits that chemical batteries have.
Right.
That they can only generate so much electricity through these reactions.
There have been a few permutations of different things. In addition to those nickel-cadmium batteries that have the memory effect problem that we mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, there was also some nickel-metal hydride. But they had a really short shelf life. They would start degrading pretty quickly.
Yeah. That's another thing about some types of batteries is that
lithium ion batteries have that problem as well.
Yeah.
They're less bad at it, but they're still not ideal.
Right. The idea being that these chemical reactions, like the longer the battery sits idle, the less juice you're going to get.
And this doesn't have anything to do with how much you use it. It's from the moment that they're made.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And also, you may have heard stories about, well, if you want to keep your batteries from degrading, you should put them in the refrigerator. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Thing.
Because it actually slows down the chemical processes that happen when you turn
actually
a battery.
Plug it in.
Yeah. When you're trying to use the battery and you're going to not get as much juice as you thought you were because the chemicals themselves are too cold to have those chemical reactions happen at the correct rate. They're still going to happen, but you're going to get a measly amount of juice out of it.
Right. So far, lithium ion batteries, especially for small uses, have been pretty rad. However, they are very sensitive to high temperatures, which is occasionally why they wind up exploding, bursting into flame.
Yeah. Let's also point out that lithium is an alkali metal. So, and we'll talk about in a little bit. We're going to talk about a possible future type of battery that people are working on right now, where that's really an issue. Both lithium and sodium are being considered for new types of batteries, but both of them are alkali metals. The big problem There are several problems, but the big problem I would say with that is alkali metals belong to a class where they tend to be, let's say, reactive when they come into contact with water. So if you've ever heard stories about sodium and water, or if you've ever seen anyone demonstrate what happens when sodium encounters water, you know it's explosive. Mm-hmm. The same thing is true of lithium. All right. This is where we get a little chemistry lesson. Everyone go and get your periodic table of elements. I'll wait. Now, if you look at the left-hand side of that table of elements, you're going to see that down a line, you're going to have lithium and you're going to have sodium that are both in that same line, as well as potassium and some other alkali metals. That means that those elements share common characteristics. And one of those is when water comes in contact, sometimes things go boom. So, first of all, never, never, ever play with these items. If you get hold of sodium or lithium, never play with that and water. This is seriously dangerous stuff.
I'll also probably just don't. I mean, because water is in the air around us in great enough quantities that hypothetically it can burst into flame.
I know of someone. This is a friend of a friend story, so it's possibly apocryphal. So it could be urban legend. I admit that. But I know of someone who, pocketed some sodium, from his, chemistry class, and then was walking around with it in his pocket. And, his body was giving off, moisture. And so he began to feel a burning sensation in his pants. And immediately ran to the bathroom and pulled the sodium out and threw it into the toilet.
Oh, no.
Which then exploded.
Which, oh.
Yeah. Again, could be apocryphal. It was a story about a high school student who went to a rival school. So it could have very well been one of those stories where, the people who go to that school are so much more dumb than the people who go to my school, which is saying something. I'm just kidding. I love all my classmates. Go Spartans. But anyway,
you were the Spartans. I was the Spartans.
Wow.
We're all Spartans.
We're Spartans.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Spartans together.
Well, this is tech stuff. So, but the point being that these elements have serious drawbacks to them. And that's one of the reasons why, another reason why battery improvement has gone so slowly, because we have to find safe ways to handle this stuff so that it doesn't come into contact with water and then just blow up.
Right. Part of that in lithium ion batteries specifically is that they have to have a very small, very simple onboard computer to manage the way that all of the bits flow around in there.
Right.
And that makes them pretty expensive. Lithium is already pretty expensive, but it makes them even more expensive than they would already be.
Now, we have seen some improvements with battery life in recent years, but a lot of that doesn't come from improvements in the batteries. It's coming in improvements in the actual electronics. We are finding more efficient ways to generate the stuff we want. So your smartphones, if you've got a smartphone recently that has a decent battery life, it may not be that the battery is so much better. It's just that the people who designed the hardware and software were able to maximize performance while being as efficient as possible. So you're still working with the same basic amount of
juice. Yeah.
But you don't need as much of it to do the stuff you are doing.
Exactly. Speaking of that juice, though, the problem with batteries and the reason that gasoline has not been ousted completely by batteries is that gasoline has an energy density of something like 13,000 watt hours per kilogram, which is just a measure of how much juice it has,
how much work you can get out of a given amount of gasoline.
Sure. The best lithium ion batteries only hold about 200 watt hours per kilogram.
So
with a hypothetical in a perfect world situation, 400 possible.
So still vastly underpowered when you compare it to gasoline.
Right.
Now there are some people out there, very, very smart people, working on batteries that would have much higher densities, power densities for their batteries, if they can get the batteries to work.
If they can get the components to play nicely.
To not explode and to work on larger scales and to work after more than three charges. There are a lot of barriers that are in place, and we'll talk about some specific cases, but keep in mind, there have been dozens, if not hundreds, of different experiments in trying to improve battery technology, and most of them just have not panned out. They might have seemed promising at the beginning, but when you get to a point where you're thinking, all right, how are we going to scale this up where we can actually manufacture it or create a battery large enough to do something useful, and then things start to break down. So one of the ones I wanted to talk about were these things called micro batteries, and this was something that that we received from that initial request to talk about battery improvements.
Right.
And this is a story about a team of researchers from the University of Illinois talking about a particular type of battery that uses these very tiny electrodes, and lots of them, and they're three-dimensional electrodes. And it was almost like these electrodes are kind of intertwined together. So they're very close together, which allows the ions to pass very, very quickly. It also allows electrons to flow very quickly. And the idea being that you would be able to release quite a bit of energy in a short amount of time, faster than you could with most batteries. And you could also recharge the battery way faster.
Right, right. Because that throughput speed has a lot to do with how effective a battery is.
Yeah. And in fact, according to several articles that were posted about this technology, BBC did one as well as some other outlets. The claim was that such a battery would be recharged 1,000 times faster than competing technology.
Oh, wow.
So you could turn your, plug your smartphone in. Let's say your smartphone has one of these batteries in it and you plugged it in. After a second, it's fully recharged. You don't have to leave it there for hours for it to charge up.
Wow.
Which is, that's a very attractive thing. So you're thinking, well, if it can release lots of energy and if it can be recharged in a blink of an eye, where's the problem? Well, mostly the problem comes in from the manufacturing side and the scalability, as well as the fact that it's not the most reliable technology. Ars Technica actually ran a great article where they really looked into this and dove deeper than a lot of the other outlets did to kind of take a look at this technology with a skeptical eye, just to make sure that it really did measure up to the hype. Because we've seen this before with battery technology, right?
Oh, yeah.
And this isn't to say that the team won't figure out a way of solving the problems that they face, but here are some of the problems. One of them is that it's really hard to manufacture these things. The way that the team was doing it, they were using this, this essentially gold, to make these little three-dimensional,
electrodes,
sort of. And then they used polystyrene, little tiny polystyrene, pills, essentially. Packing them in there, twisting the electrodes around, coating it in nickel, in a combination of nickel and tin, and then a nickel-tin alloy, actually, and then coating the rest of it with manganese oxyhydroxide, and then melting away the polystyrene so it
Wow.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Then immersing the whole thing to a liquid that was heated to 300 degrees Celsius or 572 degrees Fahrenheit. And so it's what even the team has referred to as a boutique manufacturing approach, meaning that it's very detailed. It's painstaking. It is not automated.
Extremely expensive.
Yeah, it's not.
Time consuming.
Exactly.
And
not something that's scalable to mass manufacturing methods.
Right now, certainly.
Right. That's not to say that they wouldn't find some other way of doing it. They may find a way of doing it where it doesn't require this series of painstaking steps in order to get the result that they want. But it's not ideal. Another problem is that the electrolyte they're using is combustible.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a concern. If you get it too hot, it could burst into flames. If you were to get it close to a flame, it could catch fire. And on top of all that, the battery loses about 5% of its capacity with each charge-discharge cycle. So after 15 cycles, it would be down to about 2/3 of its original capacity. And if you were to do a full discharge, full charge, it might be even worse than that.
Wow.
So while it would recharge very quickly, it would have a little less juice
each
time. And so after you recharge it 20 times,
you have to go buy a new charger.
Yeah, you have to buy a new battery.
A
new battery, right. So that raises lots of problems too. Waste problems, for example. Even if you were to say, well, that's acceptable because I want to be able to charge my phone in a second, you could do that 20 times and then you have to go buy a new battery.
Yeah, and especially when the technology to create it is so detailed and expensive.
And to be fair, you wouldn't even you wouldn't even go 20 times, right?
Because
each time you would have less juice, and so your phone would be less and less useful over time. So after your phone doesn't last more than a couple of hours, you think, well, I got to get a new battery. So that might be 6 or 7 recharges, depending upon how hard you are on your electronics. If you're me, then you'd be like, all right, recharged it, get me a new battery.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Lauren and I have more to say about the evolution of batteries in just a moment, but first let's take another quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So that's the downside to this micro battery technology. That's not to say, again, that they won't find ways around that. Engineers are brilliant at finding ways of fixing problems, but it's not going to be the revolutionary battery technology that we're all going to see in our smartphones in the next few months. It'll at least be a couple of years before we can see this rolled out in any way, assuming that they find a way to fix these problems.
Right. One of the other ones that I wanted to talk about are lithium air batteries.
Now, and this is where we're getting into those alkali metals and the concern about how they react with water.
Exactly. They could hypothetically store up to 4 times as much as lithium ion batteries, as much power as lithium ion batteries. But they work in that lithium combines with oxygen that's trapped by a carbon surface. Carbon nanotubes are popular right now.
Yep.
And the resulting interplay of these lithium ions and electrons induces the flow of current.
Yeah, you get one of the byproducts you get out of this is lithium peroxide, which is a problem because as it accumulates, it starts to make it more difficult to recharge the battery.
Right. So they've only recently figured. Well, they've had a bunch of barriers to making this work. That is one of them. They're starting to. For a long time, they didn't understand why the electrochemical reactions were going so poorly in these things. And it wasn't until May 13th of 2013 that researchers at MIT and Sandia National Labs announced that they were starting to be able to observe the reactions at all to figure out why this isn't working.
And that's when they started seeing this lithium peroxide forming that was inhibiting the flow of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And they did discover that if the electricity were flowing, that the lithium peroxide was starting to reduce around the trouble spots. And they figured that if they could improve the electron flow of the battery overall, then they might be able to get around this problem so that recharging doesn't become an issue.
Oh, right. That explosion thing that we mentioned earlier is still an issue because when you're dealing with, you know, these carbon surfaces are allowing air to basically breathe into the battery. And since water happens in air.
Yeah. You'd have to find either a way of coating the lithium inside the battery so that the water would not react with the surface of lithium. Or you'd have to find a way of filtering the water out entirely so that only.
There's some kind of membrane at the top end.
Right. Yeah. A hydrophobic membrane is what we like to call that. It's scared of water. It pushes water out. So, that's an issue. Now, there is a potential alternative to lithium air batteries called sodium air batteries that are they may not be able to hold as much energy as a lithium air battery could.
It's a lower theoretical energy density, but a higher practical energy density at the current moment.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So current moment.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So
dear.
Yeah. No. It always happens. You can't get around it. But yeah, that's. So that's a possibility. But again, remember, sodium is part of that alkali metal group. So again, same issues. You get that water in contact with sodium and battery go boom.
Yeah.
Instead of zap.
Yay, zap.
Yeah.
Right. There's also research being done into what's being called solid state batteries, which are kind of the lithium ion solution to dry cell batteries. It's using thin layers of solid electrolyte instead of the liquid that most lithium ions use.
Gotcha. Yeah, and then there's I read on Wired this interesting idea of spray can batteries, where each of the elements that you would find within a battery, the cathode, the anode, the electrolyte, all that, is represented by a different can of sprayable material. So you could actually spray this material onto different surfaces and make a battery that way. And the idea being that this would allow you to create batteries in devices that would incorporate the battery design directly into the device. So you wouldn't have this blocky battery compartment. Now, it's not saying that these batteries would be particularly efficient or powerful compared to what we have now, just that this would give us more opportunity to explore different ways of shaping batteries so that they are part of our electronics and not just, again, not just some clunky thing that you have to make room for.
Right. And also not so heavy. What would be terrific. That reminds me of the nanocomposite paper batteries that some people are working on. These are composed of cellulose and aligned carbon nanotubes woven together. And they're small, they're flat, they're flexible, they're implantable. They could hypothetically be put into medical devices.
Yeah, these could actually use biological fluid as ionic fluid.
Uh-huh.
So it ends up turning your body's fluids into the electrolyte it needs.
Mm-hmm.
This is just making me think of Idiocracy.
Yeah.
It's electrolyte. It's the thing that plants crave. I was doing the hand gesture and everything for those of you who are fans of that movie. Then there's also, The Verge reported on bacteria that are able to transfer electricity. And scientists had known about this for a while, but they weren't sure about what the mechanism was. Like, how did it transfer electricity? And they discovered that that there were proteins on the bacteria's surface that were responsible for electron transfer. The bacteria is this is going to be a train wreck of a pronunciation.
I don't have it in front of me.
Ready?
So good luck.
Shewanella oneidenesis. But anyway, it attaches to rusty iron and other materials and breaks those down. And in the process of breaking down these materials, it releases electrons. So why are we interested in this? Because by studying biological organisms that can emit electricity as part of some process where it's consuming something, we might be able to create biological batteries.
Right. And these are a little bit more a fuel cell, really, than a battery, but...
And to explain the difference, a fuel cell is a device that you put fuel into, and then there's a chemical reaction that generates electricity, and then you refill the fuel cell. So, with a battery, what you're doing is you're using an electrochemical reaction to harness electricity, and then you either have to reverse the reaction in order to get the battery to do it again, or you have to replace the battery. Fuel cell, you just refill it with fuel. So hydrogen fuel cells are the ones that most people know about because those are the ones that we've talked about for things like cars.
Right.
Hydrogen fuel cells use hydrogen, which is the most plentiful element on Earth, although you have to break it up from other stuff. It's not so plentiful in its pure state. It's usually a compound.
Right. It's in water, which is very plentiful. Oh,
and hydrocarbons as well, also very plentiful. But you have to separate the hydrogen out first, which requires energy.
A lot of energy.
But once you've got it, assuming that you've found some sort of a hydrogen mine where it's not going to take you too much energy to get it free, you put hydrogen on one side of a membrane, that has a catalyst on it, usually something really expensive like platinum. And then on the other side of the membrane, you've got oxygen. The membrane allows the hydrogen ions to pass through, but not hydrogen atoms. It has to lose the electrons for it to pass through. The electrons go through a circuit, just like it would with a battery, and combine on the other side. So the hydrogen ions pass through the membrane, and it meets up with the oxygen and says, hey, you want to go do something? I got my buddy here. My buddy here and I would love to take you out to dinner. And so the two hydrogen take out the one oxygen to dinner. Meanwhile, the electrons come back over through the circuit and recombine, and then you get water. So the output of a hydrogen-based fuel cell is water, electricity, and heat, which is why everyone thinks...
Which is a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, they think this is why we would love to use it to fuel cars, because instead of giving off all these greenhouse gases,
right.
Now, water vapor is technically a greenhouse gas, but it's water vapor. It's not carbon dioxide. It's not methane or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're very attractive. But they are, they're similar to batteries, but there is a difference.
There is.
Do you have any others?
I do have a bio battery that I was just reading about research last November at MIT, Harvard, and the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary. So mammals have in their inner ears a chamber that's filled with ions.
Mm-hmm.
And these ions produce an electrical potential which drives neural signals. And what this means is that this is the chamber in your ear that that lets the vibration of your eardrum be converted into an electrochemical signal that your brain can read.
And then interprets a sound.
Correct.
Awesome.
And so, but you've got this inner chamber that's just hanging out with ions in it, which is a potential battery. And these researchers put some electrodes in there along with a very low power, electronic device. And, the chamber produced enough power with these electrodes to power the device to wirelessly transmit data out.
That's pretty cool.
To a external drive.
Now, again, we're talking about, we're not talking about stuff that's advancing the power of batteries, but we are looking at brand new applications that are really exciting.
Yeah.
It's just, but again, this isn't the thing that's going to make your cell phone last longer.
Oh, probably not.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really low power. It would mostly be great for medical advances in, hearing aids.
Yeah,
stuff
cochlear
like that.
Implants,
mm-hmm.
that kind
sure.
of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the advances we're talking about for the most part are, again, just refining the technology that we already have. It may turn out that we just have to find a different means of generating electricity that goes away from this electrochemical model entirely for us to get beyond this bottleneck. or if one of these other, if the lithium air or sodium air batteries work out, or if the micro battery works out, maybe that'll be, that would be a huge leap ahead. And if either of those, if any of those work
any,
out.
Any more efficient chemical combination, right?
Right. So there, we're not saying it's impossible. We're just saying that it's been several decades and we've only seen incremental improvements. So don't be surprised if that stays the same. If it doesn't stay the same, if we do have this huge leap, that's going to be awesome for everybody. And that's what everyone wants. Just, you know, be prepared to wait.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed this classic episode of Tech Stuff. If you have any suggestions for future Tech Stuff topics, reach out to me on Twitter or on Facebook. We use the same handle at both locations. It is Tech Stuff, HSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.